even as a small startup, as a small-time entrepreneur, you can make stuff happen.
Bienvenue dans le podcast Activer l'économie circulaire.
Je suis Brieux Saffré.
Je suis Justine Laurent.
Nous sommes fondateurs de l'agence de conseil et design Circulable. Nous travaillons avec les entreprises, collectivités et entrepreneurs pour concevoir leurs stratégies, produits et services et ainsi apporter des solutions aux enjeux de ressources et de résilience des territoires.
Dans ce podcast, nous partons à la rencontre d'entrepreneurs, de dirigeants ou de porteurs de projets qui appliquent les principes du vivant et la pensée systémique pour concilier développement économique, inclusion sociale et régénération des écosystèmes.
Vous pouvez nous retrouver sur le site circulable.com ou sur les réseaux sociaux.
Vous pouvez aussi vous abonner au podcast pour rester à jour sur les meilleurs exemples d'économie régénérative.
Bonne écoute à vous.
Hi everyone, today I'm with Sébastien Denebro. Hi Sébastien.
Hello, hi Brick.
I'm very glad to catch up with you because it makes a long time we did not see to each other, and you have a lot of things to tell us about your experiences and your adventure. So first, can you please introduce yourself?
Good. I'm Sébastien Edith, and I have been working on the subject of circular economy for quite a while, ever since I finished my study, which is longer ago than I usually like to think. When I started off with this subject during my studies, I was convinced that I wanted to work on the biggest problem that we face altogether, and I think the problem of sustainability and resource use and resource reuse is one of the biggest problems that we face currently. I've worked as a consultant, specifically on circular economy design, specifically circular economy business model design. Mm-hmm. That was during 5 years when I worked at Greenloop in Brussels.
Yeah.
During that period, I worked with various SMEs, but also with startups. I've done lots of workshops and serious game sessions, helping these clients come up with ideas for new products, new services, and specifically business models in a way that you can actually create a circular business, which is good for people, planet, but also for a financial bottom line, because that's something I think which is essential in the whole circular economy concept. During that time, the primary tool that we used for this was biomimicry. And biomimicry is pretty much what the term says. It's bio, everything that lives, and mimic. You try to replicate that what works from the natural environment and see how that can be applied to business, to products, services, and business models. So I've done that for 5 years, but I got kind of fed up with doing lots of workshops and just talking about the subject. I'm actually, by education, I'm an engineer, a mechanical engineer, and I really missed doing something with my hands. I want to put to practice all the concepts that we left on post-its mostly during the workshops and get started.
Yeah, it's a kind of eternal problem for the consultants, actually.
Yes. Yeah, I guess you can. I guess you can relate to that. No.
No, it depends on the topic we work on.
Yeah. So then at one point, I decided that I would start my own business because during my work as a consultant, I worked with many very passionate entrepreneurs, and they inspired me. They inspired me because they were working on cool stuff and they were working on stuff which actually mattered. And that's something I think specifically in circular economy. It's a new subject, and nobody knows how a perfect circular economy is going to look like. So even as a small startup, as a small-time entrepreneur, you can make stuff happen. You can innovate in ways that bigger companies haven't thought of before. And that's really something that I thought, okay, you can really start and help to build the road and actually have an impact.
And just before going further, can you name some of the entrepreneurs that inspired you?
One of the, because what I did during my work as a consultant. We built various tools and serious games. We did lots of test sessions to improve the tools. And I think the very first company we worked with was Permafungi. And Permafungi is I guess you know them as well. And I think in pretty much every city in Europe, pretty much around the world, I think now you've got a similar concept, is where a company uses the waste coffee grounds from bars and restaurants to grow mushrooms. It's a very elegant, very beautiful concept, how you can actually make something valuable from waste within a city context. I think it was beautiful.
Yeah, in France, it's called Upcycle or La Boîte à Champignons, and yeah, they're very famous, and they developed new activities that are very, very relevant and linked to the activity you just mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's beautiful. And I saw these people actually quite quickly move up and actually have a product to sell. And I thought that was inspiring. And more than that, the mushroom itself is something that inspired me. Because besides from eating it and growing it on a waste organic material like coffee grounds, it's also something that, if given the right shape and conditions, can actually grow into a material which can be used for packaging or designing stuff.
Especially with the mycelium, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's mycelium. It's like the root system of the fungal organism, and that was amazing. So you really, really could build, grow stuff again using waste materials in a very lean way, which is actually kind of 3D printing if you look at it. Like most of stuff in nature is 3D printed, and so that was one example of a company that we were in. That was very much a startup. I enjoyed most working with startups, because they can actually, they're very fresh. You can actually have an impact as a consultant, because you can help move stuff around and actually achieve something in a limited time you work together.
Yeah, I see what you mean. And it's more agile, and you can design stuff and test it very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's nice. That really much appeals to me.
So it's... the idea of Yuma is about to come up. So how did you
evolve from that?
Yeah.
Well, when I left my job as a consultant, I had a long list of startup ideas. That was how the folder was called, with all the ideas that I thought that would be cool. And then I spent, I think, a good month. That was end of summer 2015 or 16, I don't quite remember, coming up with the best idea. And what was the best idea for me? That was the idea, the business idea, into which I could stuff as many of the concepts that I worked with, working with circular economy. So I didn't start from a startup like how can we make the most money in the least possible amount of time, with the least possible effort. I really wanted to make a case study, actually. So that's why I picked Sunglass, because what I'm doing now with Yuma, with We Are Yuma, that's the official name. I'll come back to that later. We 3D print sunglass from plastic waste. So we use recycled car dashboards, soda bottles, but also fridges, to 3D print, to make their own designs, and then 3D print a pair of sunglasses. And the idea is very much circular. So we don't only use recycled materials, but we also design the products in such a way that they can easily be taken apart for recycling. So it's a product design, but also the business model design. So people, from this year on, they will actually be able to send back their old pair of sunglasses, send them to us for free, and then we recycle pretty much the complete sunglasses while the customer gets a discount on the online store. And that way, everybody wins. We get our precious materials back. The customer actually is rewarded for helping us close the loop together, and we divert the plastic away from landfill. And that's a general idea. That's a central idea of We Are Yuma. And Yuma is the name comes from the sunniest place on Earth. Yuma is in Arizona. There's the most sun hours on a yearly basis. We used to be called Yuma before, but then we got into a lawsuit with Puma, the German sportswear multinational, because I figured our name resembled their.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was just before launching our Kickstarter campaign. That was bad news. Of course, we lost, but we changed the name to.
Ah, but I didn't think that a brand like Puma would come up and say, you're too close from us.
Yeah, well, it wasn't actually Puma itself. Of course, it was a lawyer based in Barcelona, I think, who worked for Puma.
Yeah, I see what you mean, because we had exactly the same problem with the previous name of the Circulab, which was Upcyclopoly, and we had some lawyers with very strong arguments to say, okay, you can forget about your name.
yeah, that's bad, and it's really something like when starting a business, you don't expect to be doing. But in a way, it's part of the journey as well.
Exactly.
So that's now we changed the name to We Are Yuma. So it's W.R.Yuma, and the We Are stands for specifically the circular aspect. We, the company, but also we, you, the customer. Because only together, when we work together, we can properly close a loop. It's not something we can do alone. It's something we have to work together with our customers. So it's embedded in our name. It's all circular concept.
Mm. Okay, perfect. And why did you come up with this idea of sunglasses, actually, because it's not so common to say, okay, let's make some sunglasses, especially if you live in Belgium.
That's true. We don't have that much sun. but sunglasses, why did I pick sunglasses? Because sunglasses was kind of like a sweet spot of where all these stuff combines. Sunglasses has a coolness factor to it, and I think that's something that's much needed in sustainable and circular design. I really want to move away from the tree hugger mentality and really make a circular economy mainstream. And I thought we need to have a beautiful, appealing, cool product for that. Sunglasses actually very much a means to do that. And it allows for lots of attributes as well. You can 3D print sunglasses. It's not as big as, say, a chair. Mm. A chair is quite difficult to 3D print simply because there are very few 3D printers who are actually big enough to make a chair. For sunglasses, yeah.
Maybe we can mention the great experiences by the Dutchman Dirk van der Kooij, which was very famous with some videos in 3D printing chairs, exactly. And it was really amazing. But that means like you said, very big printers, and that's not so easy to set up.
No, absolutely. I've never seen the 3D printer from Dirk, but I've seen the videos there, and it's like a big robot arm inside a chamber. These things surely are more expensive than the 3D printers we use. So that's a choice that we picked. And another reason I went for sunglasses is because it allows for a take-back program. Sunglasses are not that big, of course. So you quite easily can ship them around the planet and have them sent back in a way that is very efficient, cheap, and very convenient for the customer. So customers can send back their old pair of sunglasses by simply putting them in a normal envelope or in the original sending box, which also fits any standard mailbox. So you don't need to ship it as a parcel, but you can actually ship it as an envelope. And in that way, people don't have to run back to the post office, for example, to send back their old pair, but they can just drop it in any normal post box. So that was another reason I chose for sunglasses. And then there is the story aspect, because looking through a pair of sunglasses, you look at the world through a different lens, literatively and figuratively speaking, because that's very much embedded in our mission, to give people, to inspire people, to take another look at waste and to see it as a valuable resource rather than a piece of crap.
Yeah, in a cool and easy experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what's the purpose of Yuma, actually? Because you talked about circular economy, reusing resources, great experiences for the users. What's the main purpose for Yuma?
The main purpose for me is first also to have fun.
Yeah.
And then I think that is actually really important. And then I want to move it to another level as well, because we started at this point really thinking, if we make sunglasses from recycled plastic, this is how we do it, and this is how we make them circular. But I want to move beyond that. Actually, we want to make a product of which you don't necessarily need to tell that it's circular or made from recycled materials, but that the quality and the style and also the price is good enough in itself that circular economy becomes and circular design becomes something obvious that you don't necessarily look for in store. Like if you order a sandwich from the sandwich bar around the corner, you don't actually ask, is this good for consumption? Is it safe for consumption? Because you know it's safe for consumption. And I think this is something we should go towards all products as well, where you know it's just made properly under the right conditions and it's designed in such a way that it can be reused after. And that's something I really want to move forward to. So not just making a conversation starter, not just making a case study, but making a product which in its own purpose is something people want to desire. Because if this product is something people can relate to and feel they can be part of, then I think we've got a chance of actually making the circular economy work on a bigger scale as well.
And now you started Yuma more than 3 years ago, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
What were your main difficulties, except the PERMA experience, and your main successes?
The Puma thing is indeed is a small thing compared to the other challenges that I had with starting. The biggest challenge has been and still is technical. We're the first in the world to use 3D printing and recycled plastic to make a consumer product like sunglasses. So I practically had to redesign, re-engineer how a pair of sunglasses is made, because it's not as simple as just making a design on your computer, sending it to a 3D printer, and then you've got a pair of sunglasses. It is a lot more that goes with that. You need to take account how you do the assembly, how you treat various recycled materials. And that's a challenge as well. Like one, because we use car dashboards, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's not every car dashboard is the same as a previous or the next one. So there's variation. There's variation in the material. There's variation in the chemical composition of a plastic, which is a challenge.
You mean, for example, they add some stuff to avoid fire or to...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. The fire retardants, and classically, these are taken out of the material, but it's working with... It's not virgin material. Mm. And with that, you also have a bit of variance. And since it's very new, recycling and making 3D printing filament, 3D printer inked from that. So it's a trial and error process. So the most of the time since I started a bit more than 3 years ago has been technical, just making a product and then only selling and marketing and all the logistics that comes after that.
Mm. Great.
And if we talk about successes, we've got lots of small and big fails, lots of small and big successes. But I think the biggest success was actually launching the product.
Yeah.
And that was via a Kickstarter crowdfunding campaign. Crowdfunding works by people who actually pre-order a product, like a pair of sunglasses in this case. Then they wait for a few months. We actually use all the money that we received from the pre-sale to invest in new machines, in the material that we need. And that was good. We launched that in September 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 17. And that was good because we needed only 10,000 euros and we got that within 6 hours. So that really proved that there was a market and people actually resonated with the story. And that's that's a good feeling. And then you really feel like, okay, this can actually work.
Yeah, that's great. And I can imagine that after so many months to see your products and so many prototypes, I guess, when you see your product, you must be very happy.
You really are very happy. But it is absolutely, it's something I'm happy about. But at the same time, it's very stressful as well, because, you know, I mean, the product that we launched with the Kickstarter campaign, of course, wasn't entirely ready. So after Kickstarter ended, I really have to move it back as quickly as possible and to make a prototype, of which I produced a few, into a whole production process, and that has its challenges as well. So there's also, yeah, with every success is a new challenge, I found.
And for example, now, how many printers do you have? I mean, how many sunglasses can you produce, in a day or in a month? I don't know what's the most relevant measure to consider.
Well, I've got about 10 3D printers at this moment. Mm-hmm. If you can actually have quite a big production capacity. I limit it now to 500 pieces a month. It takes about 2 hours to 3D print a pair of sunglasses, uh-huh. after which it's another 2 days in polishing and assembling.
Polishing is so long.
Polishing is about 12 hours.
Okay. But you have to do manually, or
and then but when you do the polishing, you do automatically, it's in a machine.
Okay.
But afterwards, there's like a second polishing step, and that's something that's being done manually.
Okay.
And then you have to fit the lenses and the hinges and so forth, and that's working with recycled materials. You always have a bit of variation in your process. So adjusting the machines to allow for this bit of variation, that's a challenge.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah. But I guess it's one of the key advantage now of We Are Yuma, because you're able to produce as many sunglasses you need, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. You can, and as many, that is one, but as many variations as well. It's like the first collection that we launched, all the models were named after stars, suns in the universe, because we figured with our 3D printing, we can make virtually limitless variations or designs with 3D printers. So that's really cool as well. Like normally, if you would order like a typical fashion brand, you have a supplier. I don't have a supplier. I'm my own supplier. You have to pre-order a specific design. And once you pre-order, you need a minimum order quantity. You need to take 500 or 1,000 pieces of a single product. That's something I don't have. Like, I can make one product, and if it sells, I'll make more of it. If it doesn't sell, then I won't make a second. So it's quite lean in this way.
Yeah, great. And you mean you don't have any providers, but for the plastic, mm-hmm. you have to...
You do.
To deal with someone, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. No, I do have suppliers, but I don't have product suppliers. I only have material and component supplies, like the lenses, for example, they come from Italy. The filament, the 3D printing, come from Brussels and from Rotterdam. You need boxes, you need cleaning. I mean, lots of components that I order that are then assembled here. And now for this year, what will change as well is that we'll be working together with a social workplace called the Kringwinkel, mm-hmm. here in Belgium. And they will actually work together with me to work with people who have a distance to the labor market and wouldn't normally be readily employed, to train these people to help with the assembly and the packaging and the shipping of the sunglasses. And that way we can keep production local, we add a social aspect to it, and we can keep cost under check.
Yeah, and if we compare your cost structure with the classic sunglasses industry, let's say, how do you manage it? How is it different?
For me, what is different for me is that I have investment in machines. Like a typical fashion brand doesn't have its own machines. They just have a supplier or have various suppliers. So I had quite a big investment in the 3D printed polishing machine and all the machines that go with making a pair of sunglasses. But once I have that, I don't necessarily need a lot of upfront cash to initiate a new collection, because I can do pretty much everything in house. So once started, you're quite lean, and the cost of producing a new product, a new model is quite low, lower than a typical brand.
And actually, I realized that I have no idea of how do you make classic sunglasses. Maybe you can introduce us as the difference and how this. Classic process is not so secular, maybe.
No, that's one of the things that really put on top of the priorities from the start, is to make a pair of sunglasses that can be disassembled really easily afterwards. So no glues or things that cannot be taken apart. And that's something that's quite different than from other sunglasses, where often you have a mixture of various materials like metal and acetate. That's like the classical material that's used to make sunglasses. They're combined in such a way that it is virtually impossible to take them apart afterwards. But most of the sunglasses are produced in Asia, then Italy and a bit of France. And of course, you've got some smaller factories spread throughout. But most of the production method is by injection molding, either with plastics or with bioacetate. And you've got some CNC produced frames as well, which are more higher end from the same material. And then you've got a very, very small segment, which is 3D printed. Like, I'm not the only one who 3D prints sunglasses. Other companies are doing the same thing, but they use an entirely different type of 3D printer, which allow for more freedom, but it doesn't allow for using recycled materials, since that's something that's central in this whole concept.
But I think you're the Yuma's adventure is great, man. It's incredible to see that you can perfectly design new products reused raw materials and to make something very cool with it. And when you see the Yuma's website, you see that you don't need to mention that it's reused plastic actually, because the products are just cool. It shouldn't be an advantage on the market to say it's done with. We recycle plastic because it should be normal, actually.
It should be normal. Absolutely, absolutely. I'm now remaking the website.
Yeah.
And that's something I really want to find a way of telling this story without using the keywords, in a way. If I can make the whole website without using the word recycled, that'd be awesome. I'm not there yet. The next website will have that word, but that's something I really want to work towards.
That's great. And good to say. What's your next projects with Yuma? Because now you sold many sunglasses. What's your next objectives?
The next objective for this year is that for the first time, we will actually be closing the loop. Like, when we started off, we said that at some point we will take back the old sunglasses for them to recycle, but we haven't done that yet. Because we didn't have the logistics in place to do that. Within a few weeks, I think about a month of April, we will have that service where people actually have a specific landing page on the website where they can get their return shipping label made for free and then send the sunglasses back. So that's something that will happen this year. So the loop will actually be closed.
Congrats.
Another thing is that we will try to 3D print from plastic waste from the river, the Schelde, that runs through the city of Antwerp, where we are based. See if we can make that work. That'd be amazing, because that would then we really have a story to tell. Like, this plastic waste, which used to be just in nature, in the rivers, and use it for something locally made, which has a true added value.
And actually, where your current plastic, where does it come from?
It's mainly from urban recycling streams, like the PET and recycled soda bottles. They come from collection companies who just collect the PET waste from the streets and from the offices. Mm. So that's not the kind of plastic that would... It is actually recycled before it ends up in nature. So it's post-consumer waste, but it's not a waste that you find in nature. Same with the car dashboards. Or the fridges. These are from products that are brought to recycling centers and then taken apart to collect the materials.
Okay, and where are they located, these big recycling centers?
It depends a bit. Most of them is in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. Like most of the PET plastic from Belgium actually goes to the Netherlands to be recycled, since we apparently don't have these plants in Belgium. And this is where you've got a very precise recycling process, because you need high quality materials to make 3D printing filament. And then it's a process of sometimes mixing it with virgin plastic as well. Like the PET that we use is 90% recycled, so I've got 10% virgin plastic that goes with it. Mm-hmm. The car dashboards and the fridges are 100% recycled.
Okay.
So it's a question of finding the right balance. But there's something that's being done by a supplier, to Refill, or the Better Future Factory. They're based in Rotterdam, and they actually provide the 3D printing filament. And that's great. Work together with these people is a pleasure.
Great. And do you have other objectives for Yuma?
What we want to do in the future is really move towards a made-to-order system, which it is already quite a bit now. So we got practically zero stock. So the moment somebody orders something online, we'll actually start assembling the sunglasses only then. This way, you never have overproduction, and you never have waste, which means you never have sales either. Mm. And that is something I really intend to be doing, and working together with designers or artists as well, because that's very much in the mission, as I mentioned before. I want to make a cool, beautiful, comfortable product, which just happens to be recycled and recyclable. So making a product that even speaks more in making it a limited edition, say using street art as a design input to print on the glasses, I think that'd be awesome. That's maybe something we'll try this year, but if not, certainly for next year.
And actually, that's a good question. How do you design the sunglasses right now?
That's what I do myself.
Oh, really? Congrats, because the designs are really, really cool.
Okay, thanks. That's kind of you to say. Yeah, well, I'm not a sunglasses designer, so I just learned it a bit by working with Illustrator and some 3D modeling programs, and I just taught myself to make a pair of sunglasses. But the first ones that I made weren't very beautiful, weren't very comfortable either. You had one on your face as well. So it's a trial and error, and with every new design, every new prototype, the whole thing improves. But obviously, this takes time.
Hmm. Okay, cool. And with this great experience, especially with plastic and circular design things, actually, what would be your best advices for the one who want to get in circular design and propose circular experiences and products for their businesses?
But I think what worked for me, I can say, is that I had very clearly in mind that I wanted to make a perfectly circular product. So having that very clear from the start as a clear objective, but do not necessarily try to make it happen with the first go. When I launched the sunglasses, I didn't have the logistics or the reverse logistic recycling, the re-recycling in place yet. But it didn't keep me from launching. It's at that moment it felt a bit like I was not doing the full potential of what it could do. But at least it allows you to start. So even if you cannot make a perfectly circular product, just start with the first steps and then make sure and be transparent about it, that you are working on certain points to make it happen in the future. I think that worked for me, because if I would have waited until I really have everything ready before launching, I would still not have launched.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Sometimes you have to fake it until you make it, as some many people say.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, fake it in a way, but be transparent about it as well. Saying, this is what we want to do. We cannot do this yet, but we will. Just stay tuned.
Yeah, and give us a luck to give us a chance to do so.
Yeah, absolutely. And give us a chance. Give us your trust, and we'll do our very best.
Great. And and concerning the reusing plastic, I guess it's very tough. I mean, you mentioned the fire. Sorry, I forgot the word. Retardant?
Retardant.
Retardant. Thank you. So I guess it's part of the experience. Right. So how do you deal with this aspect? I mean, with reusing plastic, that's not so easy, actually.
It's not so easy, but it is still, again and again, there's more knowledge available on that. Like, for example, PET, soda bottles, that is a magnificent type of plastic, actually. If you can chemically recycle it under the right conditions with the right machines, you can get it back to its virgin state in the same quality. Mm. So it is as long as it's not polluted, indeed. As long as you keep your recycling, you keep the materials pure, you can do a whole lot with recycling. But of course, it's more expensive. Like the plastic that I use in my frames is more expensive as a virgin plastic.
Yeah, I guess all the things you have to deal with to be able to reuse it, that's not so easy, actually.
No.
Okay, great. And do you have things that you have you want to add to this interview?
One last thing that we will be doing this year.
Tell us.
Besides closing the loop and besides using a plastic from the river, is with a new collection that's coming up. Every pair of sunglasses will have a unique product number on the inside. So unique for every customer. And with this product number, we're now building a plugin on the website where you can actually tap this number and see the story that went into making your sunglasses. Like, where exactly did the materials come from? How was it made? How did it end up on your face? And what should happen next? Because if we tell a story, then we want to make sure that the customer is actually part of the story, is not the last chapter.
Yeah, exactly.
And in that, the customer has a kind of responsibility to make sure that these sunglasses at some point come back to us.
That's great.
And so transparency is important.
That's great. That's a great experience you offer to your user, because you're right. It's just one step among many, many other steps, and they have to be conscious and to they are just one step, and they have to consider the steps after them.
Absolutely. So they're not the end station. They're not the end consumer. And that's what was in the name. We are, and we also means the customer.
Great. Thank you very much, Sebastian. And we wish you the best for the next month, next years of Yuma.
Thank you.
And see you soon.
Yeah, thanks so much. It was a pleasure.
Bravo, vous avez écouté cet épisode jusqu'à la fin.
Partagez-le autour de vous et notez-le 5 étoiles sur iTunes pour le diffuser auprès du plus grand nombre. Si vous souhaitez en savoir plus sur cet épisode, notre invité ou nos services, contactez-nous par mail à hello@circulab.com.
C'était Justine Laurent et Brieux Saffré pour le podcast Activer l'économie circulaire. À bientôt pour un prochain épisode.